Welcome to Marketing Thought Leadership, the podcast that offers insightful discussions on thought-provoking marketing topics. Here's the host of our show, marketing consultant, speaker, author, and educator, and the president of L2M Associates, Linda Popke.
Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our latest episode of Marketing Thought Leadership. We're here today with Roberta Matchison. Roberta has been the president of Matchison Consulting, and for more than 25 years, she's helped leaders in highly regarded companies, including General Motors, New Balance, Microsoft, and many small to medium-sized businesses, achieve dramatic growth and market leadership by maximizing their talent. She's the author of six books, including Evergreen Talent, How to Seed, Cultivate, and Grow a Sustainable Workforce, and the international bestseller, Suddenly in Charge, Managing Up, Managing Down, Succeeding All Around, which was named a top five business book for leaders by the Washington Post. And Roberta has just released her newest book, Can We Talk? Seven Principles for Managing Difficult Conversations at Work. So welcome, Roberta.
Thank you, Linda. I'm so delighted to be here.
So tell us, you've really been involved with maximizing talent and helping people understand how to become better managers when they're promoted. Why did you go off on the topic of Can We Talk? Why was that something that was important for you to write about?
Well, I do a lot of executive coaching, and I began to notice a pattern. And that is a lot of my clients who, as you probably can recognize based on the title executive coaching, are at the top of the organization. And I saw that they were struggling to have conversations that and say things that needed to be said. And so over the years, I found myself coaching them. And when I was thinking about, you know, what I might write about next, it occurred to me that, you know, not only do these leaders find it challenging to have difficult conversations, but that this is going on throughout the organization.
So this book is not just for executive leaders, senior executives. It's for anybody in an organization who wants to be able to communicate more effectively.
Yes, that's very true. And in the book, I have many examples of different scenarios where you might need to speak to a coworker, and it might be an uncomfortable conversation, or you might even have to have a conversation like that with your boss. So I wanted to make sure that this book was for everyone and not just for the leaders, because if you look at most books on difficult conversations, they are solely written with the leader in mind.
I think that's important, because how do we get to become leaders if we don't know how to have those conversations to start with? And
exactly.
Maybe if we train people at a lower level, we wouldn't have the issues of managers or senior managers having these problems. So you talk about seven principles for managing difficult conversations at work. Can you tell us about several of these and why you thought these were so important to write about?
Well, the first principle that I talk about in the book is confidence. And, you know, over the years, again, I have found that confidence is really lacking. It's in very short supply.
Yep.
And so what winds up happening is that, you know, we're not really confident. We're not quite sure what to say. And so we decide that we'll say nothing. And, you know, as you probably know from your own experience, saying nothing is usually can only make matters worse. And so I talk about, you know, in the book, you know, the issue around, you know, building your confidence and trusting yourself and, you know, give lots of tips on how you can build confidence. And then another characteristic that I talk about, another principle, is clarity. And I often find that people enter into these kinds of conversations and they're really not clear what they want to happen. So they wind up starting these conversations and then they start to ramble. And then they don't even know when the other person has actually agreed. So we often derail ourselves.
So it's funny because you can keep going on and on and on, and I'm nodding my head going, yep, I was with you 5 minutes ago. Yep.
Exactly.
Okay. So in terms of confidence, clarity, I presume these are what you do in the book is you give examples of these, what's a good example, what's a bad example. But what do you see as being the biggest mistake that people make? Is it focusing on one of these seven areas? Is it not having a conversation to start with, having the worst or bad conversation? What do you think is the biggest thing that the people have to work on?
Well, I do think the biggest thing that people have to work on is having the conversation in the first place, because there are so many unsaid conversations that are going on in organizations. And, you know, the end result is not good. And so if you can get comfortable with your communication and taking on these conversations, that's really going to elevate you in the organization. It's going to make you a more effective communicator. It's going to help you build stronger relationships. It's going to help you, you know, be known as a great leader. So it's so important that we start talking, which is why I wrote the book.
Right. We need to start talking. And do you find that the people are afraid of, gee, I'm better off saying nothing than saying the wrong thing? I could see that happening. We talk a lot about social equity and injustice and things of that nature. And I know there are people who are afraid to say anything because they're afraid they'll make it worse. So do you see that happening quite a bit?
Well, yes, I do see that happening, and I see them using that as an excuse to do nothing, right? So if I don't say anything, maybe that person won't notice. But, you know,
right.
We already know that they've noticed. So I think it's a great excuse that we use. It's really time to start talking. And I advocate in the book that you start with small things that are on your mind. So some people might say that, oh, you're better off taking the hardest project and getting that out of the way, right? And then you can be freed up to do the other things. In this particular situation, I advocate that you start small and build on your communication skills and see how successful you can be, and then tackle those other conversations that you might be putting off.
So really what you're doing is building the relationship through conversations as opposed to walking in and telling me something huge. But let's start by opening up and having this relationship where we talk to each other.
Exactly. And we're honest and we're transparent with one another.
So in the book, let's see, I'm looking at the book because I have it in front of me, and you talk about confidence, clarity, compassion, curiosity, compromise, credibility, and courage. So all the seven C's of conversations. And I think that's important. All of those things are important. But what's the biggest challenge that you find your clients face when dealing with awkward work conversations? And we talked about not having them to start with, but if you get into the conversation, what could go wrong? Are there one of these seven things that really tend to help us or hurt us? Or what do you think are the right things to focus on that we need to be aware of?
Well, you know, if I had to pick one of these principles, it's sort of like asking you to pick my favorite child. But, you know, I think if we were a little more curious and we entered into these conversations with an open mind and that we didn't already, like, know how this was going to go or think we already knew what the other person was thinking, I think we would be a lot better off. Because, you know, a lot of times, even in personal situations, you know, we'll get into these conversations that can get a little bit complex. And I am a huge advocate of saying, you know, well, help me to understand. And I say that because I really want to understand. I'm not looking to change the other person's opinion. I'm not looking for them to validate me. I really want to understand. And when you approach one of these sort of conversations that way, you know, with curiosity and, hey, I really want to learn why you think that way, or I really want to learn why you're doing this project this way, even though I thought I told you I didn't want it done this way, you know, you might be more open to hearing what that person says rather than, you know, just saying, oh, yeah, I know what you're going to tell me.
So I'm sure you started writing this book long before we had the pandemic and issues about vaccines and all this kind of stuff, but it seems to me that all these things have gotten worse over the last year and a half. And now we have this issue of, you know, are you vaccinated? Are you not? Are we going to wear masks? Do we not? Do we go back to work in the physical office? Do we not? So do you think that, it appears to me that things are becoming more and more difficult. And I like the idea of help me to understand. But how do you diffuse a conversation where the other person doesn't want you to understand, they just want to tell you that they're wrong?
Well, first of all, I actually wrote the book during the pandemic.
Ah, okay.
So, and I feel fortunate about that, because had I written it before the pandemic, there are a lot of topics in this book. They're really juicy topics. And some of them I would say to you, you know, don't ever do this by phone, or if you have to do this in person. And as you well know, that is not an option anymore for
many
people.
Right.
And so the examples that I now give, because I was writing it during the pandemic, is, you know, ideally it would be great if you could do it this way, but if you can't, you need to look at these things. And so in response to your question about these conversations that are getting very complex, you know, the whole vaccine question, right?
Yeah.
Well, companies are struggling with this. And some, you know, state governors are throwing out rules saying, you know, you can't require this. So it's very complex right now. And so I think that if you're an employer, you need to be listening to your employees and hearing what their reasoning is. And if you're unable to accommodate their request, then find an alternative, right? And that might be, mm-hmm. well, if you're unwilling to take the vaccine, then we're willing to allow you to work from home. You know, that sort of thing. And let's see if we can have a dialogue and come to some sort of agreement that neither one of us is going to change each other's minds.
I think that's important, because I think too often we're trying to tell the other person that your point of view is wrong, particularly regarding the pandemic.
Yeah, we're actually trying to tell them they're an idiot, right?
Well, that too. I was being nice.
I mean, well, I'm from New York, so, but I see it all the time. Everybody's so busy yelling at each other that we're not listening.
So that's interesting. And in addition to not listening, we keep hearing about everybody in the world seems to want to change jobs. Like, I hear about this great resignation, right? Do you think that it's because part of this is because we haven't had conversations that were necessary? But how do you try to, in the middle of this situation where everybody is upset, how can you use conversations to try and kind of get people to reengage at work?
Well, I do think people are leaving jobs in droves because their bosses think they're communicating when in reality they're not. And so, you know, you might be a leader and you might think you're doing someone a favor by not telling them, like, all the things they're not doing right. But they're looking to you to give them advice and support and coaching, and you're not giving it to them. And so they're floundering. And so they look at the situation and they say, well, I'm not getting what I need, and my boss, I have no connection to this person. I'm just going to go work somewhere else. And guess what? They probably won't even notice if I'm gone. And in some cases, they might be right.
Until they say, I don't know how to replace you because there aren't enough people around, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And so we have to, you know, you bring up a great point. There aren't enough people to fill these jobs that we have open. So that says to me, you really want to double down on your employee retention efforts. And when you look at the fact that people don't work for companies, they work for people, then that
right.
onus is on the leader to make sure that there's two-way communication.
And the kind of the corollary to that is not only do they work for people, but they don't leave companies, they leave bosses, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
It's more the relationship that didn't work, and that's why I'm leaving.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's talk about, because there's all kinds of difficult conversations that someone who reads this book could have. Might be with a subordinate or a boss or a peer. But let's take an example so we give people an idea of sort of how to work through this. If I'm feeling like a coworker isn't pulling their weight, how would I start a conversation without putting them on edge? Because I know how to start it to say, you're not doing this and I need you. But how would you start it in a much more effective way?
Well, I think you use the key word that I would use. I'm feeling. So those are two words, but I'm feeling. And
yep.
So nobody can deny your feelings. So if you're talking to your coworker and you're like, you know, hey, I'm feeling like I'm picking up all the slack here, and let me tell you why, that's a lot better than, you know, man, you're really not pulling your weight here, right? And
right.
So, you know, starting these conversations is really, it's important how you begin the conversation. It's also important how you end the conversation. And sometimes we focus so much on what's in the middle, and we don't think about, okay, it's time to wrap it up, or it's time, how do I even begin? And again, that's why we put those conversations off, because we don't even know how to start.
So I get the part of not knowing how to start, and certainly I'm feeling that when you do such and such, I feel that it's more effort on me or whatever. But talk to me about how to end, because I don't think very many people think about that. It's like there's a difference between ending and stopping. You know, stopping says I'm done, let me move on to something else. But what's the right way to end a conversation like that?
Well, the right way to end that conversation is when you feel like you've said what you needed to say and the person has had a chance to say what they needed to say. You know, you say, well, you know, in closing, you know, where do we go from here? What did you hear me say?
Mm.
And then that person will have a chance to say, well, I heard you say this, this, and this. Well, hang on. That's not exactly what I said, or not. That's not what I meant. Let me clarify. Right? So when you walk away, you're both pretty clear on what needs to happen next, not just the person who started the conversation.
So we can be clear. And what I'm hearing you say here is that it's not necessary that you resolve everything in that conversation. It's important that you kind of are clear about who said what to whom and what the next steps are. Because I think sometimes we think if we can't get the whole thing resolved, let's not open up the Pandora's box and start something. But it sounds it's okay.
The chances of getting things resolved in one conversation that have been festering are very small. And
yep.
So really, that's why I go back to the point, know what your goal is. So my goal might be, you know, I just really want to open up the lines of communication. I want to start so that we can have a dialogue. I don't think that we're going to get to the end here, but I would like to start.
And you would say that to the other person,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
And sometimes people need some time to really go back and think. You know, they're deep thinkers, and they just need time to like, huh, that's really interesting. So we have to be aware of that and allow people, you know, we all process at a different rate. And so we have to give people the opportunity to really take in what's been said so that they can provide a thoughtful response.
I think that's important. You talk about in the book about creating a drama-free work environment. Do you think that we're seeing more drama in today's environment than we have in years past? Is that something that's more of an issue now?
Yes. In fact, it's funny. I was just talking to a dear friend who is visiting, and, you know, she was sharing some stuff that's on the Slack channel, right? I mean, all sorts of dissing is going on there. I'm like, really? People would really say that on there? And I'm like, yeah, we have a really open environment. I'm like, I don't care how open the environment is. Like, I wouldn't put that out there. But so I think people are feeling really free. They're hiding behind the screen. They're hiding an email. They can say whatever they want. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if we were back in the office, if they would be as, you know, as open or bold or whatever as they are in this remote world.
Well, it's in the remote world, but it's also social media in general, right? People say things on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram that you know they would not say if the person was standing right in front of you, right? So it's this idea that you can kind of let all loose. And yet all that stuff stays there and festers and gets passed around and made worse. So I think you're right.
It's remarkable. And I think that people, especially those listeners who are working for corporations, need to really be aware that, you know, whatever you say, there are no secrets. You know, you might think, oh, that's my Facebook account, right? And then you've got somebody else who's sharing it on their Facebook account and your boss happens to be friends with them, and, you know, like there are no secrets. So if you are putting it out there, you got to be aware that at some point it could come back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite lines from Ocean's 11 was where Julia Roberts sees a video of her boyfriend, Andy Garcia, doing something he shouldn't be. And she confronts him and she says, "You of all people should know wherever you go, somebody's watching." You know, it's like somebody's watching and listening. Absolutely. So we're sitting here, we're talking with Roberta Matheson, who is the author of Can We Talk? 7 Principles for Managing Difficult Conversations at Work. Roberta, if there was one place that I should start, because, man, I can see this being overwhelming as to how many conversations and where I should start and all these principles, what would be the place that you kind of would recommend someone who's just getting their toes wet and trying to get involved in better conversations? Where should I begin?
Begin with the book. Because I outline in the book, you know, how to get yourself into the right mindset in order to have these conversations. I talk about the need, as you and I just spoke about, you know, you don't have to pick the biggest, you know, issue in front of you. Pick something small and manageable and go from there. And, you know, just start somewhere. Because it's so easy to be standing on the sidelines and be so worried that you never get in the game.
Absolutely. So just get started and just start the process. Fantastic. We've been talking again with Roberta Matheson, author of Can We Talk? 7 Principles for Managing Difficult Conversations at Work. Roberta, I'm sure the book is available on Amazon and all kinds of places, but if people wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way that they should do that?
Well, they can visit my website at Matheson, M-A-T-U-S-O-N, consulting.com. They can send me a LinkedIn request and mention your podcast, or they can follow me on Twitter at Matheson.
All right. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. It was great to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks. This is Linda Popke. Until next time, thank you for listening to Marketing Thought Leadership.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Marketing Thought Leadership, brought to you by L2M Associates. If you'd like to find out how you can improve the return on your investment in marketing programs, processes, or people, contact us at www.l2massociates.com.